don't need to go to meetings.
So you need broadcasting tape.
Yes.
Are we, good, all right. Good afternoon. This is a work session. It is 3 o'clock on April 14th. We're gathered for a work session in the 12th floor of the State Capitol, the North Dakota Public Service Commission, on case number PU-20-379. This is the Montana-Dakota Utilities natural gas rate increase application. And there was a settlement that was filed on Friday. I would assume that a bulk of our conversation will be about that new settlement agreement that was filed. So I look forward to the conversation. I don't have any opening comments, but I also have with me, I don't know if I said, but I'm Julie Fedorchak, Chair of the Commission for the record. Also with me are Commissioner Randy Christman and Commissioner Brian Crosius, and it's Brian's portfolio, so I'll turn it over to Randy to see if he has any opening comments before I hand it over to Brian.
I don't have any opening comments, thanks, but probably some things in discussion.
Very good. Brian?
Okay, thank you.
It's all up to you.
Sounds good. As mentioned, it was it last Friday? A settlement came in that all parties agreed to. Advocacy, the intervener, the company, and the amount, of course, didn't change. I think it was more about impact to residential versus other rate cases. So I think everyone has read that. The high points would be the settlement changed, the impact to residential from 509 to 421 for MDU customers. It moved Great Plains customers to $3.62 increase. I didn't write down the starting point for the prior number for Great Plains before it moved to the 362.
There wasn't one in the prior settlement agreement, so I guess I don't have a basis for that as well.
Oh, okay. That would explain why I wasn't able to find it then. So really, I think the discussion for I don't personally have any qualms with the different aspects of the settlement. I thought the Hettinger franchise fee was straightforward. There was the compensation question that the incentive compensation question, the return on equity at 9.3%, write-offs. Again, write-offs and the Hettinger fee were very small. Relatively speaking, tiny amounts in comparison to the overall settlement amount, which wasn't disagreed upon by the participating parties. So I think for me, the only question I really have left is the 509 to 421. I was looking at mitigating to some extent the impact of residential. And I would say, to a large degree, that was accomplished with the new settlement. I'm calling it the new settlement. It was a contested settlement the last time with the intervener disagreeing with not the overall revenue requirement, but impact residential. And now they're on board with that. I think there's a caveat in terms of how they'll look. You know, they made mention how they'll look at future rate design, that they don't concede to the straight fixed variable rate design, but that's for future cases and not something that I think we have to flesh out here. So I would say generally, just my position is I'm in agreement with the settlement. I had originally hoped to move the residential class below the $4 mark, but it's not off by a lot. And of course, that also, then assuming the revenue requirement doesn't change, places additional burden then on the other rate classes to make up that difference to hit the 6.88. So I think I can live with it. You know, it's probably more superficial in nature to have a 3 instead of a 4 as a starting point. You know, whether it's 396 or 398 for residential to get it below that $4 mark versus 421. But we're talking 21 cents a month, or call it 25 cents a month over 12 months, it's $3 a year. So I think I can live with it. I would recognize a lot of work went into arriving at these numbers. So that's where I'm at. I wouldn't be opposed if the discussion wants to center on something else or even the 421, but I think it's a good settlement. And I think it is a good compromise between all the parties, and I think it's telling that ARP is in agreement with the numbers. So
Brian and Jack or any of the staff, do we have any sense on where we're at with parity with this settlement?
I don't have a direct parity that I can provide to you. I do know that this is does move in the right direction towards parity to a much lesser extent, according to, I guess, where advocacy staffs and the company's class cost of service study goes. It does, I think, incrementally, though, to a small extent, move it towards their believed class cost of service.
Well, and I know, I mean, incrementally, I think it takes a pretty sizable step that direction, because we're at 0.78 under mm-hmm. current rates, and it's well over 0.9. It's sure. got to be with what we've ended up at. So I'm curious if it's within that 5% range that was sort of acknowledged even by the company's own expert, that was kind of like the desirable threshold to be within 5% of parity on most of the rate classes.
So what would you call parity?
Parity would be every
return from everybody?
Equalized rates of return per okay. class, yeah.
You know, I don't think you can just believe their class cost of service study is there are many ways to do a class
right.
cost of service study. And, they've got their way. And, I'm thinking, regardless of how you do it, though, you're going to end up with the Air Force contributing a larger return.
Yeah.
And the same with the big customers, too, you know, large interruptibles and so forth. So I don't think we'll ever really get parity.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you, Jerry, just looking at those numbers. I don't know. It must be partially just the result of having so few customers in that class that they're just it throws it all off on the class cost service study. I don't know how else you can rectify that. But, I kind of had to set those two aside.
I think it's important that we're not moving the wrong direction.
Yes.
That we are not just not moving the wrong direction, but gaining some ground.
I agree with that. I also think, Jerry, you made a good point in terms of, I don't know if I'd use the words believing, but knowing that different methodologies are going to give different figures and numbers on what applicable cost of service per class, you know, in terms of reaching parity. But I think in terms of, you know, you have to look at this, if we caught, you know, everyone was caught up, we're not talking a lot more if, again, we accept the class cost of service study. And in a lot of ways, when I was looking at this, it was really making up for, past sins of prior commissions in terms of letting this, frankly, get get so far out there in terms of an accurate representation of cost per class of customer. And so I think I agree, if I heard you correctly, Chair Fedorchak, and that was, I think it's a sizable step in the right direction when you look at the starting point, mm-hmm. being so far off. So, you know, you balance that out. And the other part, small businesses that wind their way in, medium size that wind their way into firm general services, rate 70, I mean, they're still recovering too from tough economic conditions. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you get to perfection on this, because as soon as you think you've got it right, it starts to change again a little bit. But I think it positions us to, the next time around, to really do a deep dive into the class cost of service studies, and we're positioned to actually be on for every rate class. So,
just a comment on the class cost of service study. From the standpoint of taking the company's word for it, this is actually also the precedent that the previous commission and the existing one has actually set for how they view class cost of service study. To the extent that we want to do deep dive in the future, we would have to provide some sort of recommendation on the front end that we would like to see something different, because sure. this is the path that the commission has been moving down mm-hmm. Up to this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Jerry, we believe you.
And, you know, I don't know if there is an absolutely right or wrong way to figure out who's costing what.
Yeah.
So you just need an allocation method.
Yeah. Randy, looks like you have something on your mind.
Different topic, though.
I'm done with that, too.
So I guess just a few things that bother me some in here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how alone in this I am. I continue to feel that 9.3% is too high in the ROE. And this, I don't know if they're even numbered. I guess it's Exhibit A. Didn't really impress me any with the list of the states that had cases in 2020. You know, because as more years go by of these kind of absurdly low interest rates, it just seems to me that this is high in that regard. And if everybody bases their decision on that everybody else did this, then nothing can ever change. That is the definition of status quo. But what I do see in here that I find a little more meaningful is that the national average dropped by 25 basis points from 2019 to 2020. And if it was to drop 25 basis points from 2020 to 2021, the average is going to be 9.2%, which I would have found to be some improvement. So do you want me to do my other points or stop there?
I'd be happy to. I was disappointed, too, that they didn't, because you made it pretty clear that you'd hope that they would address that. And I guess we weren't part of the conversations to know whether they discussed it or, you know, what went into that. But I thought you raised a really good point multiple times in the hearing, and thought that there was some room to move on that as well.
I would like to think it's that simple in terms of, let's just keep pushing ROE down, because that it's been trending down the past decade for utilities across the country, whether they're water, whether they're gas, whether they're electric. And the entire industry right now is actually facing a downgrade. And in all likelihood, in the very near future, is going to go to BBB. So when it goes to BBB, that's going to increase the cost of borrowing. And then who gets stuck with that? Well, that's the ratepayer. On the one hand, I think it's good to go to the public saying, you know, the return on equity went down, but if it increased borrowing costs, which it will, it means they could be in for a rate case sooner than we would want them to. It's just another layer, another building reason to come back in and ask for more. And it's a tough thing to explain to the public, but ratings matter, and this declining ROE is in part causing the sector to be downgraded as a whole, and that's coming very soon. So, you know, we have to take that into account, too, in terms of what's good overall for the long term, in terms of the, you know, the long term outlook. So I went back and forth on that as well, but I mean, that's very real. And I don't know that we can trust interest rates won't be moving up. In fact, they are moving up, and I think, you know, it's speculative, but we could certainly be entering into a period of inflation. Just the lending rates have already bumped up by a full percentage point just over the last 60 days. I mean, well, I'll call it 90 to be safe, but they're moving up. And the cost of borrowing is going to increase regardless, and then you layer in an industry downgrade.
Brian, we can't forget that. Where is that info coming from? Because they didn't talk about that in the ratings.
Just looking at reading Moody's reports, S&P.
Okay. Well, it seems like that. I mean, it's a little bit outside of what we can base our decision on if it's not part of the record, and they didn't bring that up.
No, but just when you're broaching the ROE in general, that's why I said, you know, granted, it's not a part of the record per se, but. It's just not as simple as looking at the straight ROE for me.
Sure.
That makes sense.
The one point, though, I guess, from that standpoint, from 9.2 to 9.3, the question of really whether 10 basis points would be the difference for a change a large decrease in ROE would be one thing, but minor changes in the return on equity and the impact on the, the ability to the finances, that seems be a bit of a stretch, but I mean, I certainly understand your point. But
everything adds up.
Yeah, it does.
Borrowing costs add up. Sure. A downgrade of the industry layers in, that adds up. If corporate taxes go up, which again, not a part of the record, and we can't make a decision on it, but we know intuitively or realistically, that's going to go up. If it goes from 21 to 28. We could see these companies back in the door, which I would prefer to stretch the playing field if we could.
I would guess with a lot of certainty in my mind that no matter what we do in this rate case, if the income tax rates go from 21 back up to 28%, they will be back here anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the other part, too, is they have traditionally haven't, on the gas side, even come close to hitting ROEs, at least not on a regular basis. They're usually in that 7% range, 6.5%, 7%, maybe 7.5%. If I remember right, they were at 6.7. Jerry, do you remember in the last filing? And again, not to get into the weeds here, but I could be wrong on that.
Well, from a practical standpoint, if we were to do something on an ROE, and I'm not saying that I think that's what we should do, I'm just exploring what are the avenues that exist for us to alter the settlement or to go a different route.
Sure. I guess I could try to answer that question. Well, with most of these settlements, if we choose to depart from it, the company could choose to withdraw from the settlement, and then we could go back to a rate proceeding, which at that point in time, the commission could do an evaluation of the rate of return in addition to everything else as well. You could request that the parties reduce the ROE to 9.2 in anticipation that if they don't, we would subsequently want to hear the case as well.
And remind me what the advocacy expert recommended for the ROE. You probably remembered, Brian.
Do you recall?
8.7.
8.7. 8.7.
He didn't have it off the top of his head.
We're talking Heidel?
This would have been Arthur Ross Trial's testimony.
And you expect a number to come low from the advocacy?
Right.
Well, and high from the company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here. Company composed 10.2.
Mm-hmm.
What the question is, what did advocacy?
It would be Aaron Rothschild's testimony.
I believe it was 8.1.
That sounds correct. I wasn't absolutely sure about the 8.1.
In my notes, I wrote down that gave a range of 7.93 to 8.25 and averaged it at 8.09.
8.09.
That works.
My other
okay.
point of concern that I really have, and it's I would have thought a much simpler one, but maybe it's more complex than I can understand. I'm really not seeing that there is a clarity between our advocacy staff and the company on how to do these new developments and what can be backboned in and what the developers need to pay for. And I really hoped that we weren't going to finalize a rate case and then move on with confusion over that.
Well, it did look like the settlement, and I'm sure you saw this as well, Commissioner Christman, provided that they would continue to work and have a mutually agreeable tariff filing by that date. And I'm assuming if that date comes around and we do not have something that advocacy staff feels they would be able to apply correctly with the company, that subsequently you'd probably have to reopen that issue.
Did you feel like in the discussion, like there's some reason? Do they just fundamentally disagree? And so we're just not going to address it and we'll wait and set a further out date? Or is there something there they kind of fundamentally agree and there just hasn't, you know, the wording has to be figured out yet, so we're given that a little more time? Because if they're just at loggerheads, then this is no solution. But if it seems like we're going to get an agreement, then maybe it is okay.
I think based upon the record proceeding, and Pat, feel free to hop in if you disagree with me on this, it seemed like they seemed to be speaking past each other to a degree in what they thought would resolve the issue or not resolve the issue. And so I think what I'm assuming is happening is they're probably going to go back and do a deeper dig to find out really where what does need to change and what alterations need to occur. So they have that meeting of the minds, not only, I mean, factually within the tariffs and how it's expressly written, but as well as what really are the underlying issues that maybe they're missing. To come forward with a tariff revision.
Right. So they're going to collectively modify, and then the language is going to change from may to shall?
Shall revise the tariff.
Yes.
By January.
No, they shall follow the tariff.
No. Shall come up with a tariff revision.
There's the may to the shall, but then they're also going to come up with a mutually agreeable tariff revision in addition to that to try to further provide an agreeable solution.
Wasn't the May to give the company flex in terms of how they looked at different line extension scenarios, and now the shall is, doesn't that remove a degree of flex that they had in the past?
Well, if my recollection of the testimony is correct, the company stated that the May, they were applying it regardless of the May versus shall, whereas I think it seemed like the staff was under the impression that May was providing some sort of flexibility. So that's part of the misunderstanding that at least I was observing from the hearing in and of itself. So I think that's the underlying issues they're trying to see that they need to correct in order to provide a subsequent tariff revision on January 1st.
Yeah, I always sensed it this way, that staff disagreed with what the company was doing and thought it was because the tariff said that they may do this or not? The company said, well, it doesn't matter whether it says may or shall because we already are doing it, right. Which revealed the fact that what they may or shall do isn't clear enough, and they disagree on that. And sure. So we can say you shall do something, but if we don't clarify what something is, you haven't solved much.
Right.
Of course.
If you feel that there's the potential for a resolution as opposed to just a fundamental disagreement that we need to settle sooner or later anyway, then I'm fine with waiting, I think.
I think aren't we in a position where we're left to trust that advocacy staff working with the company to collectively modify rate 120 will come up with a solution that we can live with? I mean, they're looking out for consumers and making sure there isn't subsidization between rate classes, so that's what they do.
Sure. And I'm assuming, based upon some of the disagreement, they might have to go back and look at how different things have been applied up to this point in order to really create some sort of differentiation of where they're not quite seeing each other. So I think what you've observed probably in the last year or two is specific instances, and I think staff thought that this would rectify those specific instances. But, I mean, they're probably going to have to look at the whole broader application of that tariff in order to really provide an evaluation of how to fix it.
Okay. That's a good point, though.
Yeah, and I guess I looked at it like they didn't want to hold up all the other issues on something that needs more attention and a deeper dive and maybe more focused folks involved, et cetera. So. Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to either.
Yeah.
I agree with that philosophy, but I am concerned that while it's still in flex and the company sees it one way and our staff sees it another way, now we're going to have a whole nother summer of build-out, and what are they going to do that then, well, we thought was okay and
Somebody
else thought it wasn't.
But a whole nother summer of build-out will help us probably evaluate how it's being applied as well.
That's, yeah. I guess we've gotten along this long. So.
Okay. All right. So I guess that from my perspective, I appreciated the movement on the rates and the modification of both the, you know, really heavy reliance on residential rates for shouldering a majority of the burden of this rate increase. So that's been modified. We're moving towards parity. You know, on the ROE, I'm open on that conversation just because I don't know what the 1% would change in terms of revenues, but, or 0.1%. That just does help reduce the revenue requirement. And, you know, with ongoing needs for revenues that they've expressed, this is going to be coming and coming and coming. I think that's relevant. So, but I'm also willing to, you know, I'm a little, my only hesitation or my big hesitation with the ROE is that advocacy staff didn't push it harder and, you know, we're on the close side to what they recommended as their, you know, optimal ROE. So I don't feel like the record is, you know, it's not a slam dunk in terms of pushing it lower.
I think we'd have to have further discussions. I mean, actual proceeding to do the evaluation to just, unless everyone just agrees to a modification to the ROE.
Well, Mr. Portfolio Holder, how would you like to proceed?
I think it hinges on whether or not you want to modify the ROE. And then, Jack, can you explain that to me again? We would have to bring the parties back in for a formal proceeding if that changed in any way, shape, or form, or?
Well, you can request you can modify the settlement and request that modification. However, a party is not, they're not required to follow that recommendation, and if the commission wanted to move forward subsequently, they would probably, they could, I'm not saying they probably, but I have no idea what their prerogative would be. They could request that ultimately the settlement be no longer in effect, and they could move forward and actually request that we hold a full rate proceeding, which then you could hear everything and subsequently make your decision based upon the testimony provided on the ROE in addition to anything else that would be presented at the rate case.
What was the prior ROE? I should have that.
In prior case?
Prior to the rate case.
Prior to the rate case, what was the authorized ROE?
Authorized, yeah. Okay. I have that.
So it's moving down a tenth.
So, did you have nothing to add to that?
The overarching thing for me is that even settlements aren't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And is there more to like about this? I certainly like this better than the prior version.
Sure.
Because it. Mm-hmm. It still moves the rate classes in the right direction. Is it perfect? No, but I don't know if it's ever perfect. But I think overall it's pretty good. I can support it. I'm not going to throw myself in front of the train if there, the two of you want to make a move on ROE. So I'm not at that point by any stretch, but I think there's a lot of good in the settlement, and I think it's telling when you, especially in particular, have an intervener that was active in the case that is also in agreement.
Board.
So
yeah, that's true.
That goes a long way for me.
Did you have something specific to that?
No, I guess the only clarification I was saying, when we're saying what the next steps would be, it really would be heavily dependent on what the parties do.
Right.
So I'd have to give you a whole number of paths, but we would have to respond to the subsequent action of the parties.
Well, it seems like for a while most of our cases have had settlements. When you talk about doing opening something else up to explore ROE.
Mm-hmm.
We had the hearing.
We
had information from advocacy. We had information. We can really, if we wanted to issue an order based on this or the previous settlement and just change the ROE, it's up to someone if they want to appeal us, but we've gotten the information, I feel.
Sure. So we do have the information. However, when they file a settlement, the rate proceeding then changes to a settlement hearing. So it's a little bit different. They don't have the opportunity to present their case to, and they're not cross-examining, which we always provide them that opportunity to do that to of course, examine the credibility of the different expert witnesses as well as witnesses that they have. And so that would be something that, depending on how they respond, we may be in a situation where we wouldn't provide them that opportunity.
Well, I do know this. Despite the fact that I'm disappointed that whole build-out thing, that they weren't able to achieve clarity on that, I do know that if the ROE were lowered to 9.2 and the rest of this...
Mm-hmm.
held up, I would definitely be in favor of this.
Sure.
Brian, can you, I have to step out, can you wrap things up as portfolio holder?
Yes.
All righty. I'll just take my direction from you guys.
Well, I know the commission in the past has at times expressed that they wouldn't mind hearing a case regardless. So if this is one of those instances, we could subsequently schedule a full rate proceeding. And
seems like we're so very close, though.
Sure.
Perhaps if they knew that, and I don't know how the other two commissioners, well, perhaps if they sensed that that was all that needed to be changed to avoid that, perhaps they would be agreeable.
Perhaps.
I can't speculate on how they'll react. I don't know.
No.
I think we have to go into it. Doesn't that then become, where does that 10th come from, though, as well? It's not just changing the ROE, but I mean, this the settlement amount, the overall amount, isn't that based on?
Yes, the entire revenue requirement would have to be
changed.
To what degree? I couldn't tell you what 10 basis points would impact from a total number and rate impact, so forth.
Right.
And maybe minor, in the grand scheme of things. We could request that information if you'd like that to consider in your evaluation for next steps to proceed.
Well, I can't imagine that at least one party wouldn't. I think it'd be contingent on the company. I can't imagine the intervener would say, no, we don't want to lower ROE. So they're going to hop on board, and then we would get into a revenue allocation discussion beyond that, or does it? Again, I think there's more to like about this than
sure
not like about it. And I don't know that the impact of the residential class is going to change a whole lot because of it, because I don't think it's going to be a big number. I don't know. For an average residential, or you know, does it just go over to the other types of service, which include all of our industries in the state? And
if it's not a big number, they'll probably jump at the opportunity to get it wrapped up and avoid having to debate the advocacy's position of 8.1. So you want to plan another work session sometime down the road? Or did you want to?
If you'd like, we can get that information.
Okay, so they were at 9.4. The company requested 10.2. Settled in, with the settlement, 9.3, but advocacy would also be tied back to the testimony that Victor gave. And he was accepting, at least advocacy's position from the commission standpoint, was accepting of the 9.3. They weren't And that actually, this goes back to the testimony prior to this settlement, that they were agreeable to 9.3, commission advocacy. Here's the words. 9.3 ROE, this is Victor's testimony, ensures that customers do not pay an overinflated rate of return while recognizing the company's historical performance. Mm-hmm. ROE translates into an overall rate return of 6.851% when considering the company's long and short-term debt cost. I believe this ROE and ROR will provide MDU with a just and reasonable rate of return on its property, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, our own commission advocacy staff felt it was just and reasonable.
Yeah. Well, for the purpose of the settlement, they did.
Right.
But, I mean, we do have, for the initial filing and the testimony that they provided, there was nothing filed prior to the settlement suggesting a 9.3 was the appropriate rate. At that point in time, I think the position was the low eights versus the 10.2. Is that 10.1?
10.2.
10.2 is what they asked for. They being the company.
The company being 10.2. Well, it's a little different to difficult to take a commission action without a full quorum of all three of you in one room. So would it work better if we try to get the additional information and follow up with another work session, or do we have a...
For me.
Okay.
I think that's where we're at.
Okay.
The additional information is the impact of a 9.3 versus...
A decrease from 9.3 to 9.2.
I think that would make a great solution to this rate case.
Okay. Well, I think we've exhausted the conversation unless there's anything else.
Sure. Is there anything else you'd like us to look into or information provide since we're going to have another work session?
I think I might try to calculate based on the company's cost of service study.
Sure.
Whether we're within 5%, or which classes are within 5% of the overall return.
Since we have the time, we might as well, just for demonstration purposes.
See if I can do that.
We're a little short on time, so we couldn't do before.
Right, but I think at the very least, we narrow the gap by more than half.
Sure.
Probably get arguably two-thirds of the way there, which I think is pretty good, considering we're trying to play catch-up for however many preceding rate cases where the disparity was, where it landed is what was decided on by, in prior rate cases. So, okay, I don't have anything else. Randy, do you have anything else?
I do not.
Any more direction that staff needs? Okay, so we'll wait for the information and reconvene. Schedule another work session after we can look at the numbers.
Do you want that on tomorrow? Or no?
Tomorrow.
Next meeting.
Yeah, that we'll probably want to try
on today. Yeah.
I mean, I guess customers are in an interim rate right now, so there's not going to be a measurable. What's the interim right now?
Is that a real hard thing to calculate? I guess I'm hoping that we're able to do something before our next meeting.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, too. The next meeting's not until...
Yeah.
It's 3 weeks from today, so... Even though there's a interim rate in place,
Especially with it seeming like there's progress downstairs on Bill 1008, and if that's not taking a lot of our time and distracting us, I'd really like to see this thing wrapped up soon.
Okay. Well, we'll wait for the numbers, and then I guess we can do scheduling. We don't have Commissioner Fedorchak present right now, but we can, of course, schedule outside of a meeting. We can schedule at any time. So let's, Steve, if you can help assist.
Just close the informal.
Yeah. Well, but we'll still need to get input from Chair Fedorchak on her availability, but I think we're in agreement that hopefully within the next week or so we can fit something in after, and we'll have numbers by then. So, all right, this work session is closed. Thank you.